Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as ever and always, is my first mate, Slagkick.
Drink up me hearties, yo-ho!
Today is February 9th, 2013. This is episode 21. We're going to be talking to you today a little bit about the DICE Summit for the 2013 DICE Sessions. But first, as always, let's get started with some follow-ups.
Yeah, we have tons of follow-ups this week.
And with that in mind, we're going to do sort of something a little unusual for us. Because of the quarterly end for many companies' fiscal year, we have sort of financial results of, you know, like five pretty major games industry companies. So I just real quick want to go over a few sort of factoids. This is, of course, in relation to the fact that we're sort of generally trying to keep our fingers on the pulse of the general state of the industry. Most notably to me, of course, is that Disney Interactive was Disney's least profitable branch in the quarter one 2013 fiscal year.
That's not good.
Yeah. You know, my hope, of course, we have Junction Point, the Epic Mickey studio, has been closed now, which obviously we'll be getting to a little bit.
Yeah.
And we have... you know, they're putting probably a lot of money into R&D on Disney Infinity. So
they will make it back. It's Disney.
Oh, yeah. No,
it's Disney.
I'm sure they're fine. This is not THQ 2.0. But it's still, you know, it's concerning to see that Disney's gaming division is the least profitable part of Disney.
One thing that I thought was interesting, but I mean, it's not super surprising for me as a Disney fan, is that the social gaming market... their social gaming sector in the Japanese market, I guess you could say, has increased, which it doesn't surprise me because Disney loves... Japan loves Disney and Japan loves social games. So actually, yep. I don't know why I was saying that it was interesting. I mean,
well, it's interesting, but it's not surprising.
It's not surprising at all if you know anything about Japanese people liking Disney or social games. Hey, maybe that means we'll get a Kingdom Hearts social game, eh?
You know, there actually already is one.
Really?
Yeah, there's a Kingdom Hearts browser game in Japan.
Oh, I was thinking like an iOS game with maybe like $50 of DLC.
Day one. I don't care. I'm part of the problem. In related news on that point, Square Enix, at the end of their quarter three fiscal year, posted a... $61 million loss.
Ooh.
Although it is worth noting that their net sales are up.
Good.
To me, what this says is that, you know, obviously they are, in terms of their actual sales, doing better than before. But they're presumably spending a great deal of money on sort of internal development and costs and what have you.
And as we see on Joystick, or...
Yes, I have Joystick open. What are you noticing?
Or if you're looking, you know, directly at their quarterly reports, the social networking profits are up. So,
oh, definitely, I'm not surprised.
Kotaku can hate on them, but it's working. What is Final Fantasy Artnix though?
I'm actually not familiar with Final Fantasy Artnix.
Sounds like Art Beatnix or something.
Yeah, if you want to take this next one, I'll read up on what Final Fantasy Artnix is.
Okay. So, Take-Two Interactive, during their quarter three fiscal term, I guess, would you say? I'm not a really financial person, so I have to apologize to you out in Radioland. They have had a 405% increase in profit of net income.
Ooh, girl!
And, of course, this is largely attributed to Borderlands, Borderlands 2, XCOM...
Oh, yeah, XCOM was a surprisingly big hit.
NBA 2013, or 2K13, I don't know how you actually pronounce that, because it's a sports game. And, of course, GTA, all the DLC, they're doing really well in the digital market. And, I mean, you've probably can't throw a stone without hitting someone who has one of these games on Steam, or possibly all of them.
Yep, I'll sign up on that second column. I got them all.
Even NBA, even NBA 2K13.
Not on Steam, no.
Oh, okay. So I believe Captain Spike has some info on Final Fantasy Artnix.
Final Fantasy Artnix is a social game. It was developed by Square Enix in conjunction with Gree.
That's on the follow-up tip.
Yeah, we've talked about Gree a lot on the show. The main aspect of the game is card battles. This is not based, before you ask, because I heard you drawing a sharp breath in to ask, this is not based on any already existing Final Fantasy card
game. I don't care. That wasn't actually going to be my reaction.
Girl, you know you're about to be like, oh, is it Triple Triad?
No, I was going to be like, oh my god, Final Fantasy and card games. I want to go to there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, yeah. me too. It's not out here yet, but maybe someday.
Anyway, good for Take-Two to take a step back. But kind of on a more depressing note, Sony reported out on their third quarter, and they had a $115 million loss, or 10%, and 10% drop in their market shares, their stock price.
Oh, girl, that's not great.
Yeah, their stock prices dropped. I'm sorry. Like I said, I'm not a financial person. I don't play the stock market. So some of this.
Well, this stock price decline is the largest that the company has seen since November of 2008. And this is the eighth consecutive quarter that Sony has posted a loss.
It's the Vita.
Yeah, well.
Their shares dropped from 1,530 yen to 1,365, which is like from 1,651 American dollars to 1,478 American dollars.
Yeah, so that's a little disconcerting.
And, of course, we've been following the fact that their credit rating has dropped to junk status. And now, apparently, they're going to try and push the PS4 out this year.
But we'll get to that just a little bit later.
Yes.
And, of course, Activision Blizzard did their investors conference call. And it's quite notable that they announced that they sold 12 million copies of Diablo 3, which is itself quite impressive. On sort of the opposite spectrum of that is that since the release of Mists of Pandaria, they have actually lost 400,000 users to World of Warcraft. Subscriptions currently sit at about 9.6 million subscribers.
Yeah, so it sounds like they lost a lot, but honestly, they still have way more than the user base for Lord of the Rings Online, let's be real.
Why are you shading? Why are you calling out Lord of the Rings, though? What did they do to you?
It's just super boring. Sorry about it. Not sorry.
So are you, but I still hang out with you.
Rude.
I know, right? So, that sort of wraps it up, of course, for the follow-ups specifically on these sort of industry financial reports. But, unfortunately, we still have some pretty awful state of the industry news. Epic Games has announced that it is closing the studio Impossible Games. You might be familiar with this studio. Of course, we reported on it quite some time ago now. This was the studio that was made up of former members of the Big Huge Games studio.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, these folks were making the Infinity Blade Dungeons iOS game, which was much discussed at one of the Apple events last year. This project is now on hold, and I guess Epic is going to be providing the Impossible Studios employees with 3 months of severance pay and giving them the usage of both the studio name and the studio's logo.
Which is a bear with, like, eagle wings.
Yeah, no, their logo is awesome. So it sounds like probably, you know, the Big Huge Games guys were not a good fit for Epic's style. And, you know, they're sort of parting amiably, at least as amiably as you can when you're, you know, being laid off. So hopefully things will work out for these Impossible Games / Big Huge Games guys.
Yeah, that's always sad to hear. I never played Kingdoms of Amalur, but Amalur.
Oh, gosh.
Taking it to a clueless place, Amalur. Yeah, but we have them in our thoughts. You know, lots of rough times for our peeps out there in the game industry. So, for those of you who are Psychonauts fans, and we're looking into Psychonauts 2, I didn't actually know this, but apparently the guy who was the developer of Minecraft, known as Notch, Marcus Persson, he at one point was going to be funding Psychonauts 2,
yeah,
and now he's not.
Well, I guess that Notch had thought, and he cites himself as having been a bit naive when he assumed this, but he had thought that when Double Fine had stated that they needed a couple of million dollars to make Psychonauts 2, Notch assumed that meant like $2 million, and that he was quite sure Psychonauts 2 would make $2 million back. It turns out that Double Fine was thinking more like $18 million. Of course, this also speaks volumes to what game development budgets look like these days. But Notch will not be giving Double Fine $18 million to be making Psychonauts 2. So, that's not a thing that's happening. Hopefully, Double Fine will be able to work out a budget for Psychonauts 2 that does allow it to be made. But at this moment, it doesn't look like that'll be a thing they're doing with Notch.
Oh. Well, I mean, with Notch, I don't know. He sounded a little bit cocky. He was like, no, I'm not going to give that money. That would be too much work and too much money. Which, I mean, I guess it's reasonable, but we are Double Fine fans, for sure, here on Game Buoy Video Game Podcast.
Yeah. Anyway, we have a lot going on. So, next up, we have news that the Ouya is going to be sold at Target, Best Buy, GameStop, and Amazon, starting in June for $99.
Interesting.
Ouya folks claim that things are still on track for backers from their wildly successful Kickstarter to receive their Ouyas in March. Particularly,
that's very soon.
It really is, yeah. Wow. Just a matter of weeks at this point. Particularly of interest to me, of course, is that speaking to the Wall Street Journal, Ouya CEO Judy Ehrman said that extra controllers...
I thought her name was Julie.
What did I call her?
You called her Judy.
Oh, it is totally Julie Ehrman. I was so concerned about how to pronounce her last name, I guess I totally screwed up her first one.
It's all good.
Anyway, Ms. Ehrman said that extra controllers will be sold in these stores as well for a price of $49.99.
That's comparable to a controller that you would get for anything.
Yeah, it's not a bad price. That's typically what controllers run these days. I'm just glad because when I backed to the Ouya, I did not get an extra controller.
Yeah, me either.
And the more I think about it, the more likely it is I will want to.
Yeah, for some, like, two-player retro realness.
Precisely so. So that's cool. Target, Best Buy, GameStop, and Amazon in June.
Cool. So shop at Target, Best Buy, or Amazon.
Are you quite done?
I was intentionally trying to exclude GameStop to have your back.
Well played. I didn't even catch that. Next up, sort of starting something of a trend, formerly Wii U exclusive Ninja Gaiden 3 Razor's Edge has been announced for PS3 and Xbox 360. With a release date of April 2nd. This release will include all of the improvements made to the Wii U version of this game, as well as all of the upcoming free DLC that the Wii U version will be receiving.
Oh, very nice.
So I feel like this is totally fair, except to people who bought the original jank version of Ninja Gaiden 3.
Well, maybe they should have known better. You know, speaking of ninjas, we were talking about Ninja Theory last week.
Yes.
And I realized that I was having a momentary brain fart. I was thinking of Team Ninja.
No, very different people.
Yeah, so, yeah.
One of them knows how to make action games.
Okay, but I do have to say that the Ninja Theory ones weren't horrible. They just weren't super great and classic spectaculars. Anyway.
I guess you can just keep thinking that.
Anyway, I'm trying to cut them a little slack. anyway, you know, kind of sad wrap up to the THQ saga.
We get closer and closer to the end as THQ formally drops Jason Rubin, Jason Kay, and Brian Farrell, along with the rest of their executive staff. So at this point, THQ is pretty much just waiting on that auction, which currently doesn't have a date that the public is aware of, to sell off their legacy IPs, and then we're done with THQ for
now. Yeah, and it's sad because Jason Rubin, the president, said that, you know, it was their failure was their own fault, and they specifically referenced the U-Draw, so...
Of course they did. Oh, pardon.
But also Warhammer 40K MMO and Homefront.
Well, yeah, they sunk a lot of money into that obviously they never saw any return on.
THQQ.
Next up, and in closely related news.
Yes, very closely related.
Crytek, whom you may recall, rescued something along the lines of 25 employees.
I think it was almost like 35, actually.
Oh, gosh. From Darksiders studio Vigil, which was obviously one of the THQ studios, has announced that they do have a project on their plate. However, it is not anything related to the Darksiders franchise, nor do they have any interest in the Darksiders franchise.
Hmm. Well, that's kind of a bummer, but also means that maybe Platinum can get it. Fingers crossed.
Oh, yeah, as we discussed last week. Well, I certainly hope that that occurs. Also on the plate, and not exactly news, NPD reports have given us this information regarding the surprisingly low numbers of sales since its October 2nd, 2012 release, but Capcom has officially acknowledged that Resident Evil 6 was unable to sufficiently appeal to users.
Wah, wah.
I think it's really notable to see Capcom acknowledging this so openly, and I think it lends a lot of weight to their comment from last week that we might be seeing a return to the survival horror roots of the series if Revelations HD performs well later this year.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. And, you know, I was just kind of searching around to get a feel for, like, a people on message boards and stuff, and they were saying that, yeah, they really want to return to the survival horror sort of thing, and that, you know...
Well, you know, this whole action sort of branch happened with the incredible Resident Evil 4, but almost immediately when the series took a real turn in that direction with 5 and exaggerated
it
further...
Is 5 the one where they had that awkward thing with Africa?
Yes.
That was
it
not.
It also featured such scenes as Chris Redfield breaking a giant boulder by punching it.
Not even for the lols?
Not even for the lols. It is totally like a bro body douche. Like bro of the week game.
Ooh, yikes.
So I think that it's been a long time coming in relative terms for Capcom to sort of realize that while it's good to make sort of experiments into other genres, Resident Evil as a whole is a survival horror series and should stay that way.
Yeah, maybe now they'll just finally get the clue and make some Mega Man games.
This one is, of course, extremely straightforward, but in the North America, starting February 17th, you'll be able to find a Wii U Deluxe set that comes with Zombie U and a Wii U Pro controller for $390.
Nice.
Yeah, that's quite a package for just a girl. For just, you know, a scant bit more than what we paid for our own Wii U's.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely recommended from us at Game Buoy.
Yeah, you know, we're big fans of the Wii U. I'm very happy with mine. Zombie U in particular, I have sung the praises of.
I still need to pick that up.
It's an incredible game. So this is great. I love seeing Nintendo being a little bit proactive and seeing that this game is getting really great word of mouth and they're capitalizing. So if you don't have a Wii U but you're on the fence, I suggest you check this game out. For those of you that have a Wii U already, but you haven't played Zombie U, I believe there's now a demo up in the eShop.
Oh, that's very cool. I love eShop demos.
I do too.
Excellent.
And
speaking of the Wii U, on a
related note, Bobby Kotick from from Activision Blizzard. He is, of course, generally considered sort of the grand gaming guy over there. And, you know, they're certainly one of the biggest video game publishers in the world. So I understand that it's kind of accurate. Stated that he wasn't exactly thrilled with the Wii U's launch.
Can you please, I usually don't like to just straight up quote, have us quote pieces from the article, but can you please read the quote at the end of the second paragraph on this Kotaku article for our listeners?
Well, the quote you're mentioning, I think, is Bobby Kotick's actual quote. "We were somewhat disappointed with the launch of the Wii U. We're concerned about the install base for 6 to 11-year-olds. Interestingly enough, Call of Duty appears to have performed above expectations, or at least at expectations. The game that underperformed in Activision Blizzard's lineup for the Wii U was actually Skylanders."
Yeah, and Bobby Kotick is concerned that 6 to 11-year-olds are not buying Wii U.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand what he's saying. It's just the way that he said it that makes me lol. I guess I'll have to tell the kids I work with to go buy Wii U's to make Bobby Kotick happy. And I just have a really important observation to make.
Yeah?
Bobby Kotick looks like if Gollum and Frodo had a baby together.
Would his name be Dildo Faggins?
Except we're not okay with that word.
No, that's actually an awful word. I'm really sorry.
That would be a good drag queen name, though.
It would. That should be your drag name. You should do drag just to use that
name. This is not our Drag Race podcast. Reading is fundamental.
Reading is fundamental. On iTunes now. Anyway, that about wraps it up for our follow-ups. But, in fact, do you know what it's time for?
News. 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 Oh my god, news.
So, first up on news, Sony has officially cut ties with PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale creators
Superbot.
So, future DLC is going to be done by Sony Santa Monica, whom are probably just about done with God of War Ascension.
Yeah, bro.
Of particular note is that per several tweets from staff associated with the property in question.
Oh, so wait, so Kotaku is reporting based on tweets again?
Yep. Actually, I'm reporting on tweets right now. This is not from a Kotaku article.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Abe from the Oddworld Inhabitants Oddworld series of games was lined up to be DLC coming down the pipeline in April prior to this shakeup. They did indicate in their tweets that this is no longer likely to occur. So while we don't have any information about whom Santa Monica Sony Studios wants to include as DLC in PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale, it looks like they're charting their own path on the matter.
Frown. I liked PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale quite a bit.
It was okay.
I liked it because I got a free Vita copy with my PS3 copy.
Of related note, and I guess this goes for you in particular, Mr. Slagkick, Kat from Gravity Rush and Emmett from Starhawk are now available as DLC characters for free in PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale.
Cool.
There are also new minion characters, which are super deformed characters that taunt players by dancing on their opponent's graves when you get a multi-kill.
That's adorable.
And in addition to that, there is also going to be a DLC level from Heavenly Sword's Fearless chapter, which I guess is mashed up with a futuristic Wipeout track. Because, you know, all of the stages in that game are mashups.
Yeah, that's kind of neat.
Yeah, it's cool.
Cool, cool, cool.
Would you like to take this next one?
Yeah, PlayStation Home Arcade will be bringing some classic cabinet games to the PlayStation Vita. And they'll be $1.50 and include Frogger, Time Pilot, Asteroid, Centipede, Astro Smash Gen 2, Shark Shark, and Mad Blocker. So that's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Not looks... much else to say. I mean, it's kind of does what it says on the tin.
Exactly so. Next up is sort of not exactly news and not exactly the kind of game we typically discuss. But I guess in discussing Grand Theft Auto 5, which launches September 17th, Take-Two intimated that they're not planning for next-gen games to be budgeted, quote-unquote, wildly different from current costs.
Oh, so you mean development costs are still going to be pretty crazy, just not crazier.
Yeah, well, it's somewhat concerning to me, of course, that Take-Two CEO Strauss Zelnick stated on this conference
call. That's such a badass name.
It really is, though. Basically talking about how they've found ways to spend less money for the same level of development, but that there won't actually be a drop in budgets for next generation. So that indicates to me that they're going to be working smarter, but still spending crazy amounts of money.
Huh. Interesting. So we here at Game Buoy are very excited about Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, which has been co-developed by Platinum Games, of course.
Platinum!
And if you are getting it for the PS3, as I am, you can get free exclusive DLC VR mission.
Actually, that is 30 exclusive missions in this free DLC.
Oh, you were correct.
This, of course, is quote-unquote pure uncut gameplay that pushes Raiden's cyborg body to its limits.
Sounds kind of sexy. Wow.
Yeah. I'm actually really stoked. Enough that I was even considering changing my pre-order from Xbox 360 to PS3.
Yeah, I mean, but I wonder if this will just be a time exclusive and eventually they'll bring it over. That seems to happen occasionally.
Yeah, we'll see. I was super excited. I was a big fan of the Metal Gear Solid VR Missions expansion disc on the PS1 way back in the day. So I'm looking forward to this content. I enjoy VR mission content in the Metal Gear games, so I'm totally down.
Yeah, so kind of similar to the fact that Ninja Gaiden 3 Razor's Edge will no longer be a Wii U exclusive, Rayman Legends...
Are y'all bitches ready for a rant?
Rayman Legends will no longer be a Wii U exclusive.
Not a problem.
And, of course, it's been delayed until September.
Problem.
And now that means that you will also be able to get it on PS3 or 360 in November.
September, I think you mean.
I'm sorry, yes, I said September and then I said November. I meant September.
So the thing here is, this game for the Wii U, it's done. It was supposed to come out in like 2 weeks.
Yep.
That's awesome. I was looking forward to this game tremendously. It was, as you may recall, the one game that was available for play at the demo stations of the Wii U months before the release of the Wii U worldwide. It's a beautiful game. The demo that is on the eShop is super fun. I've already played it like 8 times, which is way more than I typically play a demo. So it being delayed sucks so much. My problem with this game going multi-platform has nothing to do with it being available on other platforms. I don't mind that PS3 gamers or Xbox 360 gamers are going to get to play this really cool game. The problem for me is that they are literally delaying a finished game on the Wii U to release in 7 months when the ports are ready.
Lame.
That is problematic to me for so many levels. But
why don't they just put it out now and that's months of profit they could be making?
Well, and somewhat infuriatingly, Ubisoft stated to the press that the reason is that they prefer to release multi-platform games at the same time on across all platforms. I'm not even going to go down the literal list of times that they did not do that. Although, you know, you could just look at other Wii U games, such as Assassin's Creed 3, that came out like 3 weeks later on the Wii U than it did on PS3.
Oh, yeah, well, that was just because it didn't launch. It hadn't launched yet.
Well, if they can delay Rayman Legends for 7 months, I don't know why they can't delay Assassin's
Creed
by 3 weeks.
Too bad Assassin's Creed 3 wasn't delayed for 7 months. Maybe it would have actually been a good game.
I see your shade, and I agree with it, but I'm not here for that. So I, you know, it pains me to say this, but I actually canceled my pre-order for Rayman Legends. I'm still going to buy it, but any game that comes out in September, you know, this is the game is going to come out between Grand Theft Auto 5 and Pokemon XY. So I don't mean to say that I think Rayman Legends is going to flop now, but I think Rayman Legends is going to flop now.
Which is sad, because
its predecessor, Rayman Origins, you may recall a couple of years ago when it came out, there was a big hullabaloo that it price dropped by like 60% off its MSRP a scant few weeks after release. Unfortunately, I suspect that history is about to repeat itself, and no later than Black Friday, 2 months later, do I think Rayman Legends is going to be absolutely in the budget bin everywhere.
That's so unfortunate.
So I can't in good conscience support this awful choice that Ubisoft has made when I could just wait, deal with it, and then get the game on the cheap shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
So frown. Sorry about it. This sucks. But, you know, fuck you, Ubisoft, and I'll be having fun with Monster Hunter when it hits Wii U in March.
Work. Similarly, on the multi-cross-platform initiative tip, I guess you could say.
I literally don't understand what you're trying to communicate.
I was saying that this also has to do with things that are multi-platform or... Okay, it flopped, whatever, you just take this one.
Kamiya-san from Platinum Studios, in typical fashion, had an amazing response to the Ubisoft situation that also assuages fears for many gamers. According to Kamiya-san, when asked if Bayonetta 2 and The Wonderful 101 will similarly be jumping ship from the Wii U exclusive bandwagon, Kamiya-san tweeted, "We are a developer. Nintendo are the ones kind enough to fund and publish The Wonderful 101 and Bayonetta 2 projects. So if Nintendo says we are publishing Bayonetta 2 on PS3 and 360, then it will happen. Please ask them, not us."
That is so Kamiya-san.
Which basically says that, as opposed to a straightforward publishing deal, where, you know, maybe the game could still be owned by, you know, Sega or Platinum or what have you, this is a pretty clear statement to me that Nintendo owns these games. So I feel better knowing that these games are only going to be Wii U games, although it does suck that more people will not be able to play them, but I can't say, you know, any sweat off my any skin off my nose.
Go buy a Wii U.
Wii U,
My thing, and I'm not going to get on a huge... I'm not going to diverge too much, but... I've purchased consoles for franchises before. The reason I own Sony consoles is largely because of the Final Fantasy series. So if you are that passionate of a Platinum Games fan, I'm sorry. Like, if you really want to play it, that to me would be a console seller. So I don't know. Make your own decisions, I guess. Meh.
Yeah, that about sums it up. Due to the massive outpouring of fan complaint, Ubisoft did announce Friday morning that a new, exclusive Rayman Legends Wii U demo will be hitting the eShop with new levels from the old demo, the one that we've all played now.
Oh, thanks.
So, I mean, I guess I appreciate that you're trying something, but you're sort of missing the point. We don't want to...
Meh.
We don't want to play another level for the next 7 months. We want the damn game that's done and waiting to be played.
Yeah, that's some fuckery.
Anyway, speaking of fuckery...
Yeah, this was weird.
Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate online multiplayer for Wii U is region locked.
Maybe they don't want us to have Japanese people making fun of us and kicking our asses.
Yeah. Well, as Silicon Era points out, this
means... Wow, you actually said it right this week.
This means that American players will not be able to play online with European players, whom will in turn not be able to play with Japanese players. Capcom has confirmed this news on their forums, but we don't yet really have a reason. The cause of this, you know, it remains unknown. But it's very strange because Nintendo 3DS games that support online play totally do allow for cross-region online multiplayer. This whole thing, it just doesn't really make a great deal of sense.
I mean, honestly, it could be a Capcom decision.
It almost certainly is, but it still sucks balls.
Yeah, totally.
I'm still going to buy it because I love Monster Hunter.
Oh, I'm definitely going to buy it.
And most of the people that I will be playing this game with are in the same region as I am.
Yeah, but it just sucks that you couldn't, like, play with some Japanese Game Boy listeners or...
Yeah.
Maybe ones in Singapore.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Singapore. Fire Emblem Awakening has had its first DLC released, so we now know the price details of what DLC for Fire Emblem is going to cost. There are two pieces of paid DLC now available. The Champions of Lore 2
and... Champions of Yore.
Oh, Champions of Yore. I appreciate the difference, but because I've actually already bought and played the content, lore is appropriate to describe it.
I would say so.
Still, you're right. Yore is absolutely the correct title. The individual chapters are $2.50, and you can buy Champions of Yore 2 and 3 in a pack for $4.
That's super affordable.
I thought so. I feel very good about it. I bought it, love it, will totally buy the next set.
Very cool.
I'll talk a little bit more about Fire Emblem Awakening later on in the show. Speaking of Nintendo and DLC, Pokemon Mystery Dungeon
Pokemon
Gates to Infinity will have free launch DLC.
Love it.
We don't yet know exactly what DLC... Oh, gosh, we do. This report has been updated since I added it to our show notes. The free DLC for this game that will be available at launch will be free until April 30th. The game comes out March 24th.
Oh, wow.
And this is the Poke Forest Dungeon.
Super cute. The thing that's awesome about Pokemon Mystery Dungeon is that it taps into my longtime dreams of turning into a Pokemon.
Oh, girl. Honk.
Okay.
Square Enix is teasing a dark, murderous game called Murdered. Soul Suspect. That's about all we know about it, except it looks really grimy. There's been, like, one teaser image. It has a bizarre sigil and, like, dirty puddles of water on pavement.
And, it's gonna be for PS3, 360, and PC, PSC, PC.
LOL.
But we don't know anything about it. What?
I said, we a mess today.
Speak for yourself.
But yeah, we don't know anything about this.
I'm a hot mess.
Except that in a somewhat cool move, the domain for this game's website is murdered.com.
Ah!
So that's rad as fuck.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, nearing the end, finally.
Wow.
The long-awaited Dreamfall chapters have finally been announced as in the works, under development by Red Thread Games, the previously announced project. Oh, I'm sorry. The Kickstarter just finally started, but I guess they had actually talked about this game being something that they intended to get to. This is being led by Dreamfall creator Ragnar Tornquist, one of
Tornquist.
The two, who secured the license from Funcom, whom he had previously worked with on the Secret World MMO.
Good game.
I'm a big fan of the Dreamfall games. I'm a big fan of Mr. Tornquist. And
sounds like he would be super sexy.
And I have already backed this on Kickstarter. So we'll have a link to this Kickstarter. This trailer hit. It looks gorgeous. I can't wait to play it. So hopefully it gets, you know, made. And last for today in our news roll, a new Assassin's Creed game has been confirmed to be in development. It will take place in a new time period along with a new lead character, per Ubisoft CEO Yves Guillemot, who shared this information during an earnings call earlier this week. Details are scarce, but it looks like it will be released between April 2013 and the end of March 2014. If you were asking me, it's probably going to launch the last week of October like the last four games did.
Yeah.
And that's about it for
the
news. However, we are now bringing to you a new recurring segment here on the Game Buoy Video Game Podcast. This is going to be a recurring segment as opposed to a regular segment, in that we will not be doing this every week. We'll simply do it when things have gotten too big to ignore. That is very specifically talking a little bit about rumors.
And based on the way that the gaming journalism community works, we might be doing this more often than we would think.
I don't intend on it. Keep in mind, of course, we are not super well informed on all of this stuff. We do not have inside sources, just a little bit of insight and a lot of observation. So we hope to bring you sort of a real look at this stuff and sort of help piece together sort of how likely these big rumors are to be true. Thank you for listening to me, and welcome to
Rumor Has It. Rumor Has It. Rumor Has It. Rumor Has It.
Ooh, preach.
Ooh, girl. So,
rolling in the deep.
The reason I segued when I did is that, according to a post on Reddit, gentleman indicates that he was on a flight last week where a lady in the row in front of him was working on a PowerPoint presentation for marketing strategies of several gaming titles. The one that stood out to this person was for Assassin's Creed Black Flags, which was, according to the slide that he saw her working on, scheduled for release in the holiday season of 2013. Ordinarily, I wouldn't be discussing a rumor made on Reddit, but, how do I say, there's sort of an air of truth about the way that this lined up with Ubisoft having had a conference where a new Assassin's Creed was in fact confirmed just a couple of days after this post was made.
Interesting.
So, one assumes that, you know, this PowerPoint presentation would likely have been put together for that conference. It just, things fit together in a way that it just sort of makes sense. You know, in addition to that, the name Black Flag sort of makes one think of a pirate-based game.
Yarr! See, the thing is that after Assassin's Creed 3, I feel really burned by the series. But if they put out a pirate game, I am here for that. As long as this doesn't center on that terrible ship battle mechanic.
Well, and it's funny that you say that, because the ship battle mechanics were actually very popular. A lot of reviews
because
called
people
them
have
out
no
as a
taste.
High point of the game, be that as it may.
Well, because when the game doesn't have many high points, you kind of have to stretch to find one.
Well, be that as it may, I think it's again, I can't say that this is definitely the direction they're going in. I can't say this is definitely the Assassin's Creed game that we're going to see coming out between this April and next March. But this is by far the suggestion that makes the most sense to me with what we already have in play, all of the pieces sort of on the table already. Kotaku ran an article full of speculation, including some aliens and Egypt and the Civil War. We'll post a link to that on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org. I hope it's not the Civil War, just because that's too closely related to me to Assassin's Creed Liberation, Lady Liberty, the Vita title.
Is it because she's black?
No. I am offended that you would even suggest that. No, I just think that too many settings in America would get really boring really fast.
No, I actually agree with you on that point. I really do. I'm hoping that they're going to do something a little more creative and clever, like, again, a pirate game. Not just because I love pirates.
And, you know, of course, everybody and their mom has been wanting a, like, ninja Assassin's Creed. So, we'll see.
We will see. The other big rumor this week that we wanted to discuss is that apparently the next Xbox is going to be always online, use Blu-ray, and in conjunction with the always online tip, somehow lock gamers out of playing used games.
Oh, so kind of like that PS4 rumor that's been floating around forever.
Yeah. Well, let's just go down the list real quick. Is the next Xbox going to use Blu-ray? I'm going to say yes, without question.
Because even the Wii U uses a modified version of the Blu-ray disc, right?
The PS3 uses Blu-ray discs.
Well, yeah, obvo.
The Wii U, as you noted, uses Blu-ray discs.
But it's like a modified one, right?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely correct. Wii U uses Blu-ray discs, which are, I guess, encoded with some formatting that they created in conjunction with Panasonic.
Yeah, and I mean, for as far as the next Xbox is concerned, it's certainly not going to be HD DVD.
LOL, right? Next up, always online. How do you feel about that?
The first thing I think about is that, remember the Wii U, I mean, not the Wii, the original Wii, it was like, oh, always online, and that kind of really didn't go anywhere.
Well, I think the implication for always online here is more of like Steam, where if you're not online, you just can't play your games.
Oh. Not like, oh, always able to access the internet connection and download stuff even while your console is in sleep mode.
Unfortunately, that is not the rumor that's floating around.
Ew.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's dumb as fuck.
Okay, me too. Unfortunately, this is something that I can't comment on sort of the likelihood of this, because I think it's an awful idea. I definitely don't want them to do this.
It's a possibility.
It does seem like the kind of thing that Microsoft could do in a self-serving interest of sort of keeping on lock what people are doing with their consoles.
Yeah, which is unfortunate.
Very unfortunate. Especially paired with the no used game rumors. Of course, presumably these two would sort of tie in together. I can think of a handful of ways that you could probably do that, sort of to confirm that used games aren't being played. Most notably, Sony holds a patent for NFC chips to be embedded in individual discs so that the console could confirm that the disc with, you know, whatever chip in it belongs to that console that you're trying to play on.
So, I don't like it. It doesn't sound like...
Again, they own a patent for it. It doesn't mean it's a thing they're going to use.
I don't like it. It's insulting.
It's not
to the consumers, I think.
I don't find it insulting, but I don't buy most of my games used, so...
True, but...
I still think it's a bad thing. I definitely think that it's not desirable to control how people are getting their games. I appreciate that GameStop is considered a scourge in some circles by profiting so much off of the resale of used games.
And consoles.
And consoles, of course.
But, I mean, the thing is that, like, this means that if I'm like, oh, hey, I just bought Hello Kitty Party U for Wii U, and I wanted to share it with...
Well, Wii U wouldn't have this tech. It's already out.
Okay, but anyway.
Hello Kitty Party PS4.
Or Hello Kitty Connect Party.
Okay.
Hello Kitty Connect Party. And I was like, oh man, I want to lend this or I want to bring it over to Captain Spike so that we can play Hello Kitty Connect Party together. And it's like, nope, because it's locked to your console. And then Captain Spike's like, well, I guess I'll just have to go buy Hello Kitty Connect Party.
Or we would just get super drunk and do karaoke.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, and what would happen if, like, you bought something like Baller Beats and then you're like, oh, this is actually horrible. I can't say that for sure because I haven't played Baller Beats yet.
And it sounded kind of cool.
But what if you were like, oh, I actually want to just trade this in and, you know,
maybe pick up an old copy of
Metal Gear Solid 4 or something. I don't know. I'm just being random right now. But...
Well, no, again, that's what they want to fight. I don't think they see the value in allowing you to return your games and use that credit to buy something new.
The thing is I understand that GameStop has shady practices, but I also think that it's really kind of a dick move to the consumers to tell them, no, you have to play our games this way or not at all.
And again, like I said, even though I don't really buy games used very frequently.
Me either.
I dislike this because I agree. I should be able to make the choice to buy my games wherever the hell I want, from whomever I want, and play them whenever I want. I don't feel that I should need to be online to play it. I don't feel like it should matter two tugs of a dead dog's dick if I want to play a used game.
Like, that was just a little too graphic.
Like, just straight up, I worry that this is a real thing. We have talked even on this show about, you know, how a lot of developers say that they lose a lot of money on used reselling.
Which is unfortunate.
But, again, I think that if one of the big three, Nintendo, Sony, Microsoft, were really going to take a stand and change the system to sort of fight that and prevent that, I think there are probably better ways to do it, like maybe changing the way that game pricing structures work.
Right.
I think that a lot of people would be way more comfortable buying more games at, you know, $30 or $40.
Like Anarchy Reigns, which you should go get for PS3 or 360.
Yeah,
today.
Anarchy Reigns, great game, $30. I saw a lot of people very happy with it online. So.
I can unfortunately, and this is kind of like pinwheeled into like a bigger discussion, but... you know, it kind of ties back into what we said way back in the day with our digital distribution and DLC episode, back in the infancy of Game Buoy.
Continue.
What?
Continue.
I am. I could unfortunately could see this becoming a trend in the industry, like a push towards all digital or, you know, if you do want actual media, locking it. So I could see it.
Yeah, yeah.
But that said, like Steam has... knocked it out of the ballpark with, like, oh, 75% off sales. So I agree. If they're going to make this push, they've got to look at the pricing structure.
Yeah. I think that there's a lot of discussion, not in terms of here on the show. I mean, in a larger sense, among the industry, among the platform holders, among publishers of software. I think there's a discussion that needs to happen about how to prevent people from wanting to resell games the way they currently do in the first place, rather than just locking it down and not allowing it. So, unfortunately, Game Buoy's stance on the next Xbox rumors. Blu-ray, yes. Always online, possible, but we hope not. Anti-used games, possible, and we pray to God that it's not true.
Yeah.
But we do sadly recognize this is unfortunately the kind of misguided action that these companies tend to take. So keep your fingers crossed, and hopefully, if this is currently a thing that they're going to do, maybe they'll see all of the negative reaction to it online and be like, oh, the world is not ready.
Maybe they will, or maybe they won't. And then next console generation, Nintendo will come around and do it right, like they always do.
You damn fanboy.
Yep.
With that, we're quite a way into this episode already.
And we haven't even begun our discussion yet.
And we haven't begun our discussion yet. So, we're going to talk a little bit today about this year's DICE Summit. DICE is, of course, a really great event that's put on annually.
I have a confession. I didn't even know that it existed before this year.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. So DICE is an annual multi-day gathering of video game designers in particular. The information I'm looking at right now cites video game executives. But while executives are in attendance, they're actually not usually the ones sort of putting on these really cool sessions that are almost like the video game equivalent of like TED Talks.
Cool.
Like really neat little like sort of alternative thinking to what you're doing workshops and what have you. This is held annually.
Makes me think of like GDC, but a little more like flashier.
Now, see, that's funny because I would say that it's similar to GDC, but in a little bit more of a sort of almost alternative thinking kind of way.
Right.
Anyway, DICE Summit is held annually in Las Vegas. It was established in 2002 by the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences, and it's host to the annual Entertainment Software Association's Interactive Achievement Awards. We will, of course, be talking about this year's ESA Interactive Achievement Awards. But first, I wanted to sort of talk a little bit about, in particular, the keynote this year. Do you have any more questions about DICE before we start?
No, I think following the news this year clearly demonstrated that this is something that gamers should pay attention to if they are interested in design and the creative process behind games.
Excellent.
Also, the game executives, I guess, like go on like hikes in the canyon and have like mimosa brunches, apparently, according to the schedule.
Which sounds rad as hell.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to the keynote.
Well, this year, the opening keynote was basically Gabe Newell and J.J. Abrams palling around on stage talking about narrative in games and narrative in movies and sort of discussing sort of the movie audience in contrast to the game-playing audience and... You know, it was neat. It was really short. It was much shorter than most keynotes at these sort of big events.
Yeah, Gabe Newell made a joke about making a Portal or Half-Life movie with J.J. Abrams, but maybe not so much a joke.
No, actually, rather than that, they're saying that it was meant to be like a real statement of intent.
Wow. See, I thought it was a joke.
No. They've actually said very specifically that...
Oh, man. If they made a Portal movie, fanboys everywhere would just, like, jizz in their pants. I would be down for it, too.
Yeah, no, I definitely would, too. You know, they discussed sort of how players are often asked to, and this is a quote, to imprint themselves or relate to mute, empty vessels. Which was J.J. Abrams' complaint, while playing a clip from Valve's Half-Life that showed mute protagonist Gordon Freeman. Of course, then Newell contrasted how frustrating it can be for a viewer not to have agency while watching a film. So, I guess their goal from the sound of it is to sort of work together and... if not create, you know, sort of a new medium through which to explore storytelling, then to try and sort of reconcile these differences in working in interactive fiction in these different mediums.
Yeah, which is kind of interesting because at first when I first was reading this, and it was actually coming together for me a little bit more now, I was like, oh, they're joking about making...
Because I'm here explaining it to you?
because I'm like, oh, they're joking about making movies, and then they're kind of poking fun at each other's creative works and their shortcomings. But no, they're actually trying to further the dialogue about storytelling. You're exactly right.
Yeah, well, that was precisely the point. I absolutely implore you, typically, the Dice Summit website, which we will link on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Typically has an archive of the videos of these sessions. I absolutely implore you, if you're interested in these sort of big design questions and these discussions on these sort of big issues, I absolutely recommend that you review these archives, because this stuff is gold. It is just really insightful, clever dialogue. It's happening about big issues in the industry right now on a very related note. And if you follow GameBuoy on any of our social media platforms, which we will now be referring to as the GameBuoy Video Game Podcast social links, you'll notice that we asked you a question about this news story. We'll get to your responses later on in the episode, but for now, during his DICE session, legendary games designer and Deus Ex co-creator Warren Spector had some stern things to say about the current state of the industry. He also, of course, poked a little bit of fun at the recent closure of Junction Point, where he worked with Disney to make the Epic Mickey games, as we discussed last week.
Yep.
But the thing that really sort of stuck in my own craw is that he inspired a really sensationalist headline from Kotaku.
Big surprise.
Except, actually, there's a plot twist here, because Kotaku's sensationalist headline was absolutely correct. So, the thing that really stuck in my craw here, though, and like I mentioned, you know, this sensationalist headline is unfortunately absolutely accurate, is that Warren Spector gave Kotaku an excuse to run an article called "Warren Spector Doesn't Think Lollipop Chainsaw Should Have Been Made."
See, most other developers or game designers would respond to that with, "Ah, douchebags." Kamiya-san, well, if you happen to be out there listening, you are my hero.
Well, so often, you know, it's not unusual for these sort of super respected game designers to sort of subtly shade other games, sort of, you know, the violent lowbrow stuff, or, you know, just the really exploitative stuff. It's not that uncommon.
Yeah, but I take issue with
Warren Spector has done it himself. Continue.
I take issue with him talking crap about Grasshopper. That's just my thing.
Yeah, so the thing is, in this specific instance, he very specifically was discussing how games need to change. And I'm going to read this quote, and then I'm going to explain what made this problematic.
Is it as good of a quote as Bobby Kotick's from earlier?
It's not just about time. It's not just about giving me shorter experiences. It's about the content. My interests in content have changed dramatically, and I suspect this is true for many of you. There are some games that should just not be made. At which moment, Spector displayed an image of Lollipop Chainsaw on the screen behind him. So I appreciate this brilliant sort of pitch for a discussion. This session in particular was called "Hey You Kids, Get Out of My Yard," or "The Graying of Gaming." It was supposed to be about the current state of the games industry, how it's changed, and how yet he is still waiting for it to change.
Very much, it sounds like its intention was very much of in a GameBuoy spirit.
Oh, absolutely, I would say. In fact, I was very excited for this talk,
yeah.
And I remain I believe he's correct to a degree. You know, he goes on a little bit later and he sort of justifies his point, except to me, not at all. And let me explain here. He's talking about how he wants different kinds of games to be made. And valid. again, I'm quoting, "I have no interest in guys who wear armor and swing big swords. I have been the last space marine between Earth and an alien invasion. I really just don't need to go there anymore. I want content that is relevant to my life, that is relevant to me, that is set, you know, in the real world. If we're going to reach a broader audience, we have to stop thinking about that audience strictly in terms of teenage boys and even teenage girls. We need to think about things that are relevant to normal humans and not just, and this part also rubs me the wrong way, not just the geeks we used to be." And I think that that is, in some ways, a really spot-on criticism of where the games industry is
at.
Oh,
I agree.
Now.
It's
an observation we hear on Game, but we have made ourselves. But, again, I think it's possible to have really cool, really different, emotionally complex games like, let's just say, Heavy Rain, because that meets pretty much all of his criteria. And still also have stuff like Lollipop Chainsaw.
Or Mass Effect 3.
Or Mass Effect 3.
And 2-in-1.
I would say the Mass Effect series certainly
married the two things.
Pardon?
It married the two concepts.
Well, that's what I mean. Yes, yeah. It absolutely deals
you're
with
like,
concept
what?
That is relevant
you're like,
to
what?
Life.
Shepard and Kanan getting married?
Okay, well, that's fan wink. That's
No. But
like,
my,
I appreciate
my,
that
no,
marriage
just,
is an issue, I guess, but it's not.
No, I was just poking fun at my use of the word married and thought that you might have misinterpreted it.
I was so high on my horse that I didn't even realize that you were just making a joke.
Yeah.
Okay, credit to you.
I was poking fun at my use of the term married. Married to concept is what I meant.
Yes. Well, and again, I think it's absolutely possible.
And I think I just think
that arena to take a science fiction game, a game with big swords, and still explore complex human issues. I also think it's possible to have games that are just about complex human issues. Again, see Heavy Rain.
And sometimes you just want to, just like you want to go see a, you know, I was almost going to say Michael Bay film, but no, let's not go there. You want to go see a big Jerry Bruckheimer blockbuster, just action and fun and nothing too heavy.
Well, and again,
so what's wrong with playing a big dude, burly dude in armor with a swing and a sword? Sometimes.
Well, and for me, that's exactly my point. I agree with you. My problem with this entire quote and with Warren Spector running his mouth on this the way that he did. Again, I have nothing but respect for this man. He's done great things for the industry. He's produced and worked on incredible games. But the fact remains that for me, we as an audience are all lessened by the availability of fewer points of view being explored in the game's realm. We need giant swords. We need crazy sexy girls. We need crazy sexy dudes. We need not sexy girls. We need not sexy dudes. We need not just only content relevant to normal humans and not geeks. I think that we need content relevant to normal humans and geeks. I mean, to use
and
his,
bros and
to use
and
his terminology
gamers.
Exactly. We need to be more
and
inclusive.
Children.
We need to expand. We need to.
It's just.
Cover
it's
all
almost
the
like. It's almost like in his plea for appealing to a wider audience, he just wants to homogenize the experience.
Well, that's exactly my concern. He seems
and I
to
think,
state,
and it might have just been the way that he presented it. Maybe his.
In his attention-grabbing way, and admittedly, we're talking about it now, so it certainly worked there, but the fact remains that, to me, saying something like Lollipop Chainsaw shouldn't exist just because it's a lowbrow, violent, silly game.
Except it's more than that.
That you don't like as an individual, like Mr. Warren Spector, that doesn't mean that it doesn't have value to other people.
I just my issue specifically with Lollipop Chainsaw, which I granted have not gotten around to yet, but just knowing what I do about Grasshopper's Game, about what Suda 51 tries to do, if you're just, and I'm not saying you, I'm just saying if someone out there, including Warren Spector, writes it off as just a lowbrow violent game, that's missing a lot of the point of what Suda 51 and Grasshopper try to do with their games.
Well, yeah, and I've read some really interesting discussions on how subversive the game is in its way.
Yeah, and I mean, similarly, I took the Space Marine thing to mean Commander Shepard. I mean, that seemed very obvious.
I thought it was really more about Gears of War Halo characters.
Oh, then. But even then, Halo 4, you talked about here on Game Buoy is, like, really surprising you.
Yeah, I really thought it was very... I was really surprised by it. I was really surprised by the story, by the art design. Like, just overall, I thought it had a lot more going for than expected.
I mean, while I would say that we both agree with... the overall sentiment of what
the idea that there are audiences that still need to be catered to.
And I think maybe what he was trying to say is we need more experiences like Journey, for example, or we need, I don't know. I mean, he name dropped The Walking Dead, right?
Let's see. He did commend Walking Dead and Heavy Rain as two of the best experiences he's had in gaming in a while.
And that's cool. That's good for him. I have to say, side note, I've only played a little bit of The Walking Dead. I'm not really too interested in it, but I respect that people are into that. But I don't want to see that just become what everybody does, because that's the experience that, and that's what the audience wants, you know? I don't want it to see just that. So, yeah, I can't help but be rubbed the wrong way by a lot of this.
Yeah. I also, obviously, as an aside, I also take issue with his use of the geeks we used to be, as if that's somehow this weird, awful thing to be sort of not cool or to be really interested in books or games, like, obsessively so. Like, get your head out of your ass, boy. You make video games.
Yeah. For sure.
So. Those were the two sessions I really wanted to discuss here. I still want to go over the DICE Awards winners.
Yes, because very, very relevant to Game Buoy.
But first, I want to do a quick overview of some of the other sessions that occurred, because there were another, like, 15 sessions.
Yeah, it's a very action-packed summit.
And, you know, this is the norm for DICE Summit. Let's see. Julie Ehrman, the CEO of Ouya, whom we were just speaking of, did a session called The Revenge of the TV.
The Revenge of the TV!
But no. and it was mainly just about, you know, their strategies for marketing the Ouya and how they hope to sort of recapture the mobile games, like cell games, market on the TV. So, you know, that's interesting. And, you know, it was more interesting to watch than I'm making it sound.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, like we've talked about with Ouya, I think it's pretty cool, even though, you know, we do have reservations about it. We think it's cool what Julie and her posse are trying to do with the Ouya. So
oh, definitely.
Props to them for trying to do something different and kind of change the, what am I trying to say? Not the horizon, but the landscape of the gaming industry and broaden our horizons, I guess you could say.
Let's see. Another session that I had hoped to have a discussion about, but unfortunately, you know, it occurred to me that we would basically be saying a lot of the same things that we just said. David Cage, the CEO of Quantic Dreams, whom you might be familiar with from their work on Heavy Rain, had a session called The Peter Pan Syndrome, The Industry That Refused to Grow Up. Obviously, this is about, it was about a lot of the same issues we were just discussing. But for me, the ultimate answer is that, again, I think that the industry is growing up, just not in a strictly linear fashion. I think that things are becoming more diverse and more inclusive. It's just happening at a slower rate than we as individuals are aging, so it seems to be going really
slow.
Yeah,
and I mean, the whole point of the Peter Pan story is to recognize, and I'm not trying to get into literary analysis here, but, you know, just like the whole point of the Peter Pan story is to recognize that, you know, it's okay to, like, capture your inner child or whatever. That's not what I meant. Recapture the feeling of your inner child. I don't know. Capture your inner child just sounds like you're abducting children, which we do not support. But there's nothing wrong with, you know.
Again, you know, now we have games like Heavy Rain. 10 years ago, if you described Heavy Rain to someone, they would not have possibly believed that that game could exist.
That's not a video game.
And admittedly, outside of the PC sphere with some of the, you know, LucasArts games and the sort of spin-offs and side genre games there too, stuff like Grim Fandango. Like, okay, someone who's playing Grim Fandango probably could believe that Heavy Rain happened. But for the most part, that game would not have been made 10 years ago, and now it is, and now a lot of people recognize it's amazing. You have stuff like Journey, you have stuff like Walking Dead, which, but then though it's also not to my speed, it does attempt to explore human themes and sentimentality. Yeah.
But then there's also
feelings.
Things like Super Mario Brothers, and it's long-lasting.
I don't understand what you mean there.
My point being is that not everything has to be, oh, deep human issues. You can just, sometimes you could just be Mario, the Italian plumber, walking around in galaxies that are really cool designs. It doesn't have to. There's not anything bad about. And this kind of taps into why we defend Nintendo so much, is that, you know, it's not just for children, you know, so these experiences. Just move on. I don't want to start ranting about Nintendo. I guess the point is that, yes, it's cool that these games are pushing more mature issues, but there's nothing wrong with not exploring that, I guess.
Well, and that's exactly why we didn't discuss this presentation.
Except then I kind of tried to do it.
Because as we discussed in reference to Warren Spector's session... and I'm sorry, I'm starting to get a little bit parched. We've been going on so long today. But as we discussed with regard to Warren Spector's session, I just feel like the industry growing up means including more mature content, not mature content at the
sexual level.
No, that's not what
I was kind of trying to
the exclusion of other types of games and interactive fiction and entertainment.
Right, right.
The existence of exploring what it is to lose a child in Heavy Rain doesn't negate the wonder of being shown new interactive 3D worlds in which to play and have fun.
Right.
But I think that both of them are equally important to continue exploring. Yeah.
See, I was trying to work in a shout out to our episode.
I knew you were, but it wasn't really the appropriate place.
Well, let's continue with some more of these so we can get
let's
this moving.
See. There was a design keynote by Glenn Schofield, the GM and co-founder of Sledgehammer Games, called "The Art of Inspiration." I didn't have time to watch this session, so I'm waiting for it to go up online. But Sledgehammer was formed as one of the satellite Call of Duty studios, so I'm interested in what he would have to say on that matter.
That definitely sounds like something that we here at GameBuoy would be very much into.
We had The Secret Mechanisms by Jesse Schell, the CEO of Schell Games. This is actually a follow-up talk to a talk that he gave back in 2010. That actually went viral. And the topic was about gamification to sort of adding points and play systems to your everyday sort of needs and agenda, like the things that you need to get done every day, your schedule, and like sort of assigning point values to it to sort of give yourself a sense of reward as you're taking care of your life. Anyway, it's a super weird talk, but this one is up in its entirety in video. Kotaku has it, so we're definitely going to link to Kotaku. Well done. Kotaku actually had a lot of really great coverage of DICE this year, so
it was surprising. Shout
outs to them for sure. You can find that link at GameBuoy.org.
I think our buddy Steven Totillo was actually there at DICE.
GameBuoy.org. Thank you.
GameBuoy.org.
And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he was at DICE. So, let's see. I'm not really going to discuss any of these other...
I'm interested in checking out the one called Sessions. Multiplatformism by Amir Rao. I don't know if I'm saying that right. from Supergiant Games. That sounds like something relevant, but, you know, I'll have to check that one out.
Okay, why don't you tell me a little bit about Supergiant Games?
Well, I mean, it's not so much that it's behind Super... that the guy behind Supergiant Games was giving the talk. I mean, of course, Bastion was huge and, of course, available on multiple platforms. But it's just more that multi-platform initiatives, even in this very episode, you know, it's very, yeah, it's very topical. So, I mean, I'd just be interested in hearing what he had to say. And I know, you know, I don't think I loved Bastion as quite as much as some people did, but I recognize that it was a good game. So I'd be down to hear that.
Well, you're in luck because that session is actually online in its entirety. I saw it linked at Polygon.
I love Polygon.
Yeah, they've been turning out some good stuff. So definitely if you're interested in hearing Amir Rao talk about the challenges of porting Bastion to various platforms, I'd definitely check out the video over on Polygon.
I intend to.
Delightful. Okay, let's talk
about... That was your one.
Oh, gosh, I bet it was. okay, let's talk about the awards. In Prime, of course, these are the Entertainment Software Association's Interactive Achievement Awards.
That's a mouthful.
Colloquially referred to as the DICE Awards. We're just going to go over real quick. I'm going to mention the category and then the winner and the developer. You ready for this?
Did you really just go there?
Action Game of the Year was Borderlands 2 by Gearbox Software, published by 2K Games.
I feel like we're at the award show right now.
Mobile Game of the Year, Hero Academy by Robot Entertainment. Now, that's interesting to me. I actually played Hero Academy for a short bit. It's a pretty cool game.
Cool. This seems really fun. Can I announce one?
No, because I want to do the next one, because I have a QQ. You can do the one after that, though.
Okay. You'll like that. Fair.
Handheld Game of the Year. Paper Mario Sticker Star, developed by Intelligent Systems. No, your opinion is wrong, and you should feel bad. That game was awful.
Isn't Intelligent Systems something we talked about last week? And then you were trying to think of what the systems part of it was, and I was like, oh, obviously someone's not intelligent, and it was a really bad joke.
I don't think that happened, but if it did, you should feel bad for it.
It did. Maybe you just totally tuned it out. I think that did happen.
Probably. I tune out a lot of the dumb shit you say. Anyway, moving on.
You are not going to kill this buzz for me, because I am about to present the award for Outstanding Achievement in a Risical... Oh,
fuck. Ruined it yourself, girl.
The award for Outstanding Achievement in Original Music Composition goes to Journey, developed by That Game Company. Woo! Totally agree, though. Beautiful soundtrack.
You could take the next one, too, dog.
The award for Outstanding Achievement in Sound Design goes to Journey by That Game Company. Woo! Also totally agree.
Outstanding Achievement in Story goes to The Walking Dead by Telltale Games. Outstanding Character Performance goes to Lee Everett, The Walking Dead by Telltale Games. Downloadable Game of the Year goes to The Walking Dead by Telltale Games.
Okay.
Do you want to take this next one?
Yes, but really quickly, I just have to clarify. I totally respect that a lot of people whose opinions about games we highly respect, including our good friend Rob Roberts from OLR, Orange Lounge Radio, love The Walking Dead. I understand that I probably need to spend more time with it. I just haven't been totally blown away by it yet, so. Anyway, the award for Casual Game of the Year goes to Journey by That Game Company.
Wait, I'm sorry. If this is Casual Game of the Year, should I be making, like, woo girl sounds and like bro dude sounds. Do that again.
The award for casual game of the year goes to Journey by That Game Company.
Woo, 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 woo.
Yeah!
Web-based game of the year goes to SimCity Social by Maxis and Playfish.
Cool.
Family game of the year goes to Skylanders Giants by Toys for Bob.
Yay!
Role-playing slash massively multiplayer game of the year goes to Mass Effect 3 by BioWare. And I mean, I'm cool with that. I love Mass Effect 3, but I wouldn't describe it as a role-playing game, though.
Shade.
Strategy simulation game of the year goes to XCOM Enemy Unknown by Firaxis Games.
Very cool.
And that one, I'm just going to have to clap it out because that's awesome. I love XCOM. I am so happy to see that it is getting so much praise this year. If you want to take this next
one. The award for outstanding innovation in gaming goes to Journey by That Game Company.
Woo! Yeah! You go, player two!
Just as a side note, when we do our top games of 2013, we need to do an award show style because I'm having a blast right now.
Yeah, no, that's a thing that's going to happen. We'll probably have a few guests here in the Game Buoy studios.
Yes, we will.
Sports game of the year. FIFA Soccer 13 by EA Canada.
Goal!
Stop. No. You should feel bad for what you just did. Racing game of the year.
No regrets, no fucks given.
Racing game of the year. Need for Speed Most Wanted by Criterion Games. How the hell is that not Forza Horizon? I'm sorry, girl, but what?
If it was like race car driving simulator, that would be Forza.
Fighting game of the year. PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale. By Superbot Entertainment.
Not anymore.
Oh. I just... Calling that a fighting game is a little silly to me. Okay.
Yeah.
Outstanding...
This is mine. This one's mine.
You whiny bitch.
The award for outstanding achievement in online gameplay goes to Journey by That Games Company.
Woo!
And you know, it's interesting that they got that because didn't the online gameplay give you serious emotional feelings?
Yes.
Outstanding achievement in connectivity. Halo 4 by 343 woo, Industries.
Yeah!
Outstanding achievement in animation. Wait, what? Assassin's Creed 3 by Ubisoft. if you mean outstanding achievement in broken animations falling through the world, maybe.
I need a minute to recompose myself, sorry.
Bitch, did I tell you about the time I was playing Assassin's Creed 3 and the scripting or whatever broke off and so someone walked into a wall and then the whole scene broke and I had to hard reset my console? Like, I'm pretty sure her animations, didn't work right, because she walked right through a wall, though. Like, spinning in circles, flying through a wall.
Have you seen the YouTube video where some dude bros were doing, like, a Let's Play or something, or they were live streaming Assassin's Creed 3, and I have to just give in advance, if you have any children around, cover their ears, but if you have children around listening to Game Buoy, they probably have already heard us say much worse than this. The game glitched out to look like Connor Kenway was masturbating a red coat.
Hot. I'm here for that.
I'm sorry. Okay. The award for outstanding achievement in art direction goes to Journey by That Game Company. Woo!
The award for outstanding achievement in visual engineering goes to Halo 4, developer, 343 Industries.
Woo, 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 yeah!
Outstanding achievement in gameplay engineering goes to XCOM Enemy Unknown by Firaxis Games.
Woo!
okay, you take this one, I'll take the next one, and then we both need to do the last one. Like, we're...
That's too much planning.
No.
Adventure Game of the Year goes to The Walking Dead by Telltale Games.
Cool. The award for Outstanding Achievement in Game Direction goes to Journey by That Game Company. Woo! Now, see, here's what I'm going to do.
And of course...
No, wait, no, because you hear me out. I want it to be like the St. Patrick's Day episode of 30 Rock, where we're both reading Host One.
Yeah, that is no shit. I was sure that's what you wanted to do.
Yeah, so we're going to do that. Ready?
Game of the Year goes to Journey by That Game Company.
I'm host number one.
So, no, you know, but you're not. Sorry, dog.
Rude. The thing is that we had a little fun reading that, like, on an award show, but the reason why it's so notable for us is that this is very much, you know, aside from, like, FIFA Soccer, Need for Speed, overall, these are all Game Buoy type of games.
Yeah, many of these are games that we have discussed in the last year.
And so it's really cool to see the DICE Awards recognize the sorts of things that we do. And, you know, that's not groundbreaking, but, you know, I think it was... pretty cool.
Although, to be fair, we say that, but basically the only one we really agreed on was just Journey over and over.
Pretty much. Although, but no, the Walking Dead, they're definitely on the tip there.
So. Just the tip.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, no, and also XCOM and Mass Effect 3, so you're right.
Halo
you're
4, right. You know.
Yeah, that's not really a Game Buoy game. I just happen to really like it.
That makes it a Game Buoy game. Borderlands 2, we talked about Borderlands.
Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, so...
Of course, for further reading and viewing, all of the DICE 2012 sessions are up at dicesummit.org.
And that just to clarify, would be DICE from the previous year, in case you're...
Yes, the 2012 sessions.
I just wanted to clarify.
And presumably, the 2013 sessions will be up in the future.
Yes, and we'll make sure to do a follow-up on that when they go live.
And
over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org. For now, I think it's time to discuss something else. I don't know, like maybe...
I said, hey, what's going on?
So
what hey, is... Hey, 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 hey.
What's is going on? In fact going on?
I was asking you.
I have spent, in the 5 days since it came out... I've spent about 23 hours playing Fire Emblem Awakening.
Nice.
Yeah, it's Saturday and it came out Monday. So that's, I don't know, I might have a serious problem.
Have you cut work to play it yet?
I haven't, but yet is very much in play here.
Well, you haven't Animal Crossinged as I used to do, so.
Well, it's
that's
I'm addicted.
Great that you're just so addicted to it, though.
I'm interested and into it enough that I bought the virtual console release of Mega Man 2 on 3DS and haven't gotten around to playing it yet.
Oh, that's right. That came out.
Yeah, that came out just this past Thursday.
I need to go to there.
What about you? What
you didn't want to talk about Fire Emblem Awakening? What about
it? It's incredible. It has a great story. It has great art design. The writing is fucking unreal. The way the relationship system works is super compelling. Every character pairing that you can imagine has its own awesome little story. Obviously, you can't see them all in every playthrough because once someone gets married, they're married forever or until they permadie.
Can you get gay married?
Sadly, not. Normally, I would have QQ, but there are storyline reasons why hetero couples get married, so...
Oh...
I don't want to spoil it, but I'll tell you off the air if you want to know.
Okay. The funny thing is that because my budget's a little tight right now, I have to hold off for a bit. And, you know, of course, Fire Emblem Awakening had, like, all that shipping delay drama that lots of people I saw, like, on the social networks getting very pissed off about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I bought it off the eShop.
Which is awesome.
I got it Sunday night at 9 p.m. I was able to start playing... a couple hours before it came out, really.
Right. Well, I mean, it was already out, but before you were theoretically able to get it in a store.
Well, yeah, certainly in our time zone. It went up at midnight Eastern, and we're in Pacific, so fuck yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, but the point being that, you know, it's for budget reasons that I haven't been able to pick this up yet. But I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, trying to get myself prepped for playing Fire Emblem Awakening. Because like I said, I played through the demo of it when we had been talking about that. And I actually, at first I was like, oh, that's okay. But I actually ended up really liking it. So I thought, okay, well, I'll play some Pokemon Conquest to kind of warm myself up for Fire Emblem. And it's all right. I've played a little bit. But I'm like, oh, I just want to play Fire Emblem Awakening instead. And then I also, after the news of Junction Point closing, although was Junction Point did not have anything to do with Power of Illusion, right?
That's correct.
But that said, you know, I had Epic Mickey on the mind because of the Junction Point closure, and so I was like, I'll put that in because I had received that as a gift actually, and you know, I was expecting like a Castle of Illusion or what was the other one? What was the other one that?
World of Illusion,
thank you. I was expecting an experience like that. And, I mean, I can definitely see that it's in some ways an homage to that. But, I don't know. It's just there's a lot of times where you'll have to, like, okay, go down to the touchscreen and now trace an object to make it appear. Which, you know, it's like that makes sense because it's Epic Mickey. You have the paintbrushes. But when you played it on like the Wii or whatever, you know, it felt like it flowed with the gameplay. This is just like, oh, pause, draw something. Okay, now you can win this platform. Oh, now you have to erase this platform so you can get somewhere. And I'm just like, I really don't like the flow of the gameplay, like at all.
Yeah, you know, that's actually a pretty common complaint. I've heard quite a few people say that.
I'm really honestly pretty let down by it. And because I was so hoping that it would just be, you know, like, oh, a little bit tying into the Epic Mickey concept, but mostly gameplay-wise, you know. I mean, I don't see why it had to be like, oh, touch screen.
Yeah. I could have very easily. A lot of people see these gimmicks and feel like they have to use them in order to check boxes.
Well, it's like I think of the terrible use of the rear touch slider for the Vita and how, like, I have not seen a compelling use of it yet.
You know, I actually have one. DJ Max Technica Tune uses the rear touchpad.
Okay, that sounds rad as hell, though.
Yeah, it's pretty
cool. I should
actually
pick that up for Vita.
I'll let you play my copy tonight. You can see how you like
it. Cool, that sounds great. Actually, that sounds so super cool. It sounded super sarcastic. But, yeah, so I was let down as a fan of all those old, you know, classic Power of... Power of Illusion is this one, but Castle of Illusion, World of Illusion, and you know those were Sega developed. So I mean, obviously, it wasn't going to be, you know, the same thing.
Yeah, it was meant to be homage.
But you know, there were even some of those. Capcom put out a couple Magical Quest.
Oh yeah, I was a huge fan of all three of the Magical Quest.
Yeah,
games.
I loved the Magical Quest game. So I was just really hoping it would be more like that. I mean, I just don't see why they had to resort to the touchscreen gimmicks. They could have just very easily been like, okay, the touchscreen can be used for, like, power-ups or maps or, I don't know, inventory, whatever. And then just, you know, just use the same basic mechanics for the painting as Epic Mickey did. It just, this, like, really seemed like overkill, and of course you know, maybe it gets more compelling later on, but I honestly don't know if I care to find out.
Well, and that I think that's that.
And yeah, so I kind of was like, oh, I don't know. I kind of felt a little bit bummed out by my gaming time this week because I didn't have a lot of time to game. So I was like, you know, I'll play some stuff on my 3DS. And I was like, oh, I would have rather been playing one of the many PS3 games that I just ordered recently. So yeah, a little bit of a flop week for me in gaming.
Oh, poo. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Well.
So this would normally be the time when we would be discussing articles, but that's still kind of under construction.gif. Also, we've been talking way too long today.
We have. I'm really starting to lose my voice. So, I think with that, it's time to look at our social links for the week. Of course, we have a little bit of listener feedback. Dan Diaz has suggested, obviously one of our more frequent listeners, that GameBuie check out the Kickstarter for Power Up, the modern retro shoot 'em up for PC and Xbox. I, after getting this message, checked it out and did back it. Hopefully it's going to get made because it looks pretty cool. It does what it says on the tin.
We here at GameBuie, we seem to have pretty good luck with our Kickstarters. I had pledged for one called Forced, which is being done in Sweden, I think, or Norway, one of the Scandinavian countries, and that was really successful and is actually kind of on its way to hopefully getting greenlit. So we seem to have pretty good luck, so we'll keep our fingers crossed. Thank you for the recommendation, Dan Diaz, and we always love to hear your recommendations, and particularly Kickstarters, because we love Kickstarter.
We love Kickstarter. Now, we started something new this week. As you've heard, we are now referring to our vague listener feedback segment as GameBuie's social links.
Because who doesn't love Persona?
And this week we've started a new experiment. We got a late start on it, but we did a social links question of the week. Our question this week was, during his DICE 2013 session this week on the maturation of the games industry, games luminary Warren Spector gave Kotaku cause for running a chillingly accurate sensationalist headline by stating outright that there are some games that should just not be made, while an image of Lollipop Chainsaw was projected behind him. Captain Spike and his trusted first mate Slagkick will be discussing this weekend.
Did you hear that? Trusted.
But we'd like to hear from you. What did you think about Spectre's suggestion?
And we got a reply over on Twitter. We love Twitter.
We fucking love Twitter.
And I've actually got that tweet right here for y'all.
Why don't you read it?
It is from our Twitter follower, DJ Gaylord. And,
hey.
And he said, I think you can only properly answer this question with the benefit of hindsight. Superman 64, Mafia Wars, etc.
Now, you know, I adore you, and so I hate to disagree with you on the air, but I'm going to say the minute Superman 64 came out, we all knew it shouldn't have existed.
But, I mean, I think he does have a very, very valid point that hindsight
sometimes shows. I definitely think that that's true. Hindsight tells us
particularly from a developer's perspective.
Well, okay. I mean, and I guess you can make an argument that in hindsight, Night Trap shouldn't exist. Except although I love Night Trap.
We should play some Night Trap.
Fuck yeah, I'll dig out my copy right now.
Get your Sega Mega CD.
And that was the only response we had to our social links question of the week.
Thanks, DJ Gaylord.
Thank you, DJ Gaylord. In the future, we will be posting these a week before we record so that y'all have time to answer them. Please keep an eye out to our Facebook, our Twitter, our Tumblr, and our Google+.
Yes.
How to find us on all of these services, we're going to go over now.
So, first of all,
we love your feedback.
We love it.
I just told you all the places that we like getting it. We also like your iTunes subscriptions as well as your ratings and reviews there.
But, you know, if you subscribe to us from another, like, podcatcher or whatever you want to call it.
That's fine,
too. Good for you. But we love iTunes subscriptions and ratings, and we have no comments. So leave us a comment.
Yeah, let us know.
We will
read
it on air. We will read it on air and say nice things about you.
We will almost certainly
say nice
things about
you. Unless it's a one-star review, and then we'll say mean things about you on air. No,
I won't say mean things, but I'll probably...
We'll say mean things about you off air, but on air we will acknowledge and appreciate the input.
Yeah, and hopefully work on fixing whatever was broke.
And then we'll just read you to filth off air.
We also want your Facebook likes.
Facebook.com/GameBuie.
Facebook.com/GameBuie.
As always, you'll be able to find links to our episodes. Please comment on any episode link. Please say hello.
Girl, like, now you're acting thirsty. We don't need their feedback that bad.
Rude. I like to be social.
No, I
do like
too.
Our social links.
I like our social links a lot too. I think we have some of the best listeners in the world. I love you guys.
We just love to hear. We'd love to hear from you more. Don't
we
be shy.
We definitely want
to
fucking tweet with you because we love Twitter. That of course is gamebuoy.org. .org is spelled out DOTORG.
Gamebuoy.org. .org is spelled out DOTORG.
You want to lay that Google Plus on me?
First, I'll give them the Tumblr because we have just launched a Tumblr. We kind of alluded to that last week. You know, this will be kind of a work in progress as we try to figure out the best way to, you know, utilize this unique Web 2.0 experience. But follow us, you know, and tell us what you'd like to see on Tumblr. We're at gamebuoy.tumblr.com.
Gamebuoy.tumblr.com. And keep in mind, there's no E in Tumblr.
Yes, Tumblr.
Tumblr.
Florbs.
Florbs.
We are not yet on Florbs.
Okay, we're getting punch drunk.
All right.
Wrap it up.
And we just joined the fray on Google Plus. And if you want to check us out there, feel free to check us out at plus.google.com/u/0/b/10554764946/1055476049364684946 4648396. Did I just read the same number twice? Okay, fuck that.
I was going to repeat that, after you, but instead maybe everyone should run a search for Game Buoy on Google Plus.
I'm never reading that again. I'm sorry. But you know what you can do is if you go over to GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
We would love for you to actually visit our for real site. We have a little section called Social Links on the newly designed GameBuoy.org. Redesigned, I'm sorry.
GameBuoy.org.
And
newly redesigned.
A little under construction.gif, but you know, hopefully
under construction.gif.
Hopefully a cleaner experience. There's a little Google
cleaner
Plus
experience.
Button.
Google
there,
Plus button.
There are social links.
Social
buttons.
Links buttons.
And also, please take note on the new GameBuoy.org. That you can register.
Register.
And this creates an account with our GameBuoy site. I thought you were going to repeat after me.
Nope.
And you might not know this, but you can comment on the actual post.
Okay, we're getting bloaty.
No. I would like people to actually like feel like they can leave comments.
Okay, we have a system in place. You can leave comments on our posts on
GameBuoy.org. We actually always have, but just we've never really
talked
about
it. Do it if you want
to. We'd love for you to do it.
So, I want to shout out to a couple
of
other
podcasts. We need to give our emails.
Captain Spikes. You have 5 seconds. Go.
Captain Spikes at cpt.spike@gamebuoy.org. I'm Psychic at psychic.gamebuoy.org.
Thank you. Of course, as always, we want to shout out to Koopa Club. If you like what we do, but want it somehow gayer and even more Nintendo-oriented, check these guys out. They're great, and I love what they do. Orange Lounge Radio. OLR for short, where every gamer has a voice and from whom we take ever so many of our cues. And, of course, they're led by Rob Roberts, with whom we now share screen time, by which I might mean airtime, being Chatty Cathy Hose in Reading is Fundamental. Darlings, this is the seasonal show where we sip tea and dish dirt on Logo's highest-rated drag queen competition reality show.
Work, hunty.
RuPaul's Drag Race.
May the best woman win. I'd like to shout out to Nerdgasm Network, the wildest 3 hours of Shock Shock video game radio you will ever come across, bro. If you are a World of Warcraft fan, I can recommend no podcasts more than The Best Little Horde House in Azeroth, the place for World of Warcraft news, but never too seriously, and Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO, even if it lost 400,000 subscribers. And last but not least, Video Game Outsiders, where you can get video gaming from the average player's perspective, and they actually said a temporary goodbye to Michelle Madison over there as she relocates across the country. So,
but I like her.
Yeah, I like her a lot too. But they are some fun peeps over there. So, as ever and always, we like to deeply thank Zelda Reorchestrated for the beautiful theme music that we present to you. So go support them today. And with that, keep gaming, stay classy, stay flashy.
Keep thinking, as keep ever thinking. And always, and see you, space cowboy.
Ahoy, mateys, and welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
Now!